I'm John Krall. Today we're going to talk about an important part of Indianapolis's and Indiana's cultural landscape. We're going to talk about Indy Pride's Circle City In Pride Fest. We'll talk about what the festival is, what it means, and how it's grown over the years. My guests will be Indy Pride President Nick Murphy and Indy Pride Vice President and Festival Co-Director Chris Moorhead. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the statehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indy Pride Circle City In Pride Fest. I keep wanting to say because the N is the Associated Press abbreviation for Indiana. So if you're a journalist, you're trained just to go with the Indiana at that point. And my guests are Nick Murphy, who is Indy Pride President, and Chris Moorhead, who is Vice President and Festival Co-Director. If you would like to join the conversation, please do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. Well, first, let's talk about what the festival is. And then I do want to get into the history of it, because it is the way it has grown over the years is a fascinating part of our cultural history as well. So, Nick, how about if you start by talking about, well, actually, I'll throw that one to you, Chris, since you are the festival co-director, probably having the specifics of what the festival is, what it includes would be
most definitely.
Be good to start with you.
We're really excited. I mean, the growth that we've seen over the last couple of years has just lent itself so wonderfully to our community and the diversity that we celebrate all year round. And that's kind of what our theme and our goal was this year with the festival, is to make sure that we're presenting every single facet of our entire community. This year we're presenting 16 events over 9 days, one event of which has already happened, which was our Mr. and Ms. Circle City and Pride pageant, where we actually named 3 winners this year. Nick can go into detail on that a little bit later, as far as the details on that. But coming up this Saturday, we've got the Rainbow 5K Run and Walk. That's followed by Pride Bowl, which is our first ever bowling event. Then our community picnic on Sunday. Well, it's just an all-ages event. Everyone's invited. That's totally free. Baton Rouge is our charity softball drag competition with the Bag Ladies. It's a wonderful spectacle. That's followed by Pride Skate that evening. Then we roll into Monday, which is Pet Pride. Tuesday, which is Honda Music and Movie Night. Diversity Night with the Fever, which is another first-time event. We'll be going and joining forces with Indiana Equality Action down at the Fieldhouse to watch a Fever game together, which is a wonderful first-time event. Thursday night, we go to Girl Pride, featuring Luciana and Mary Lambert, who is a Grammy-nominated singer and songwriter. Then we go to Bag Ladies as well that night, which is Loud and Proud at Greg's. Finally, wrapping it all up on Saturday, June 14th, down at the festival grounds in Mass Ave, we've got the parade kicking off at 10 a.m. and the festival opening at 10 a.m. as well. So every event that entire week is family-friendly, full of diverse things, all the way up through the end.
Now, let's assume that people who were driving in their cars didn't pull over to the side of the road and write all of that down, Chris. Is there a URL or someplace people could go to get a schedule of events?
Well, first and most important thing they could do is like us on Facebook. They'll get all the active festival updates. But if they just wanted to go to a website, it's circlecityinpride.org.
Okay. And are there you emphasize that a lot of the events are free. Are there some that do have a cost?
There are. The only ones that actually have a cost associated with them are Diversity Night with the Fever, which is a discounted group rate that we were able to work out with the Fever to support our community, as well as Girl Pride and Bag Ladies. There's a suggested donation. The Rainbow 5K Run and Walk is an entry fee if you want to actually participate. And then also to emphasize that on Girl Pride Night, men are definitely invited there as well as transgender, you name it. It's an everyone event.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about how this event has evolved over the years? Because now, I mean, last year we were talking off the air, had a huge, huge turnout. I mean, basically a small city involved in this event. I mean, how many people did you have last year, Chris?
85,000 people last year.
85,000. How many showed up for the parade?
30,000.
30,000. Nick, that's not the way this event started.
No.
How did it start? And then let's talk about some of the steps, how it got to the point where it is. Because as I was saying, it sort of tracks the way Indianapolis and Indiana have dealt with the LGBT community.
I mean, historically speaking, we can trace prides back to the early 80s when they were mostly private affairs held at hotels, bars, and people that went there may not have felt necessarily comfortable with being in attendance at an event that was labeled as a pride, even if people knew about it. And so there are historical instances of people wearing masks to go into the event. And, you know, through the 80s and 90s, there were larger pride events, including a celebration on the Circle in the late 80s that, when you think about the time frame, was pretty amazing to be in the Circle in the heart of Indianapolis. And then really everything started to coalesce. There were some times with competing festivals. Mm-hmm. And then everything kind of coalesced again in the early 2000s, specifically 2003, when it went back to University Park there on the other side of the War Memorial. And from there, it really just expanded exponentially. The parade was added, and we just started seeing more and more people come out from, you know, 15,000 in those years to just growing and growing and growing, to the point that when we moved to the American Legion Mall and Veterans Memorial Plaza, things just exploded into the 70s and 80s thousands. And it's not just the LGBT community that's coming out. It's the straight community. It's people with their children, because it's become a very family-friendly event. And so you've just really seen how attitudes have changed over the course of really, you know, 25, 30 years here in Indianapolis.
We are talking about Indy Pride Circle City in Pride Fest. I overcame the AP training there. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Well, what, you know, at the end of the day, we've established it's a fun event, but it's a lot of work. Indy Pride, I should emphasize, all volunteer organization.
That's correct.
So everybody who is committed to this is basically, you know, throwing a significant portion of your life at doing this. Why is it so important? What is the goal, other than throwing a good party? What is the goal for the festival?
Well, and I think, you know, it was definitely more on point years ago, but it still is important today, is that for a lot of people, they're not allowed to be themselves on a daily basis. And, you know, this is one time a year where everybody can come out, feel safe, and, you know, be happy with who they are. And obviously when you see on the news there are, you know, kids being bullied and there are suicides and suicide attempts, you know, it's still very much important that people know that, you know, they might not be able to feel at home throughout the year, but they have a place here in June, in the second weekend of June, where they can come and celebrate who they are and be happy with who they are. And
has that evolved over time?
It definitely has evolved. I think this year, you know, our focus on making sure that we're providing as many diverse events for as many people in our community as we can touch, and making sure that, you know, I don't want to go to the festival. All right, well, we have a bowling night. We've got, you know, you've got animals. We've got a night for you to come out and celebrate with your animals and be around other pet lovers. That's the whole essence of what we were tried to put into this event, so much so that even our stage lineup is full of LGBT performers, and that's the first time we've ever done that. So we've got the entire rainbow connected on stage in events throughout the entire week, and we're very excited about that.
In terms of, it sounds like, I mean, if you're talking about 85,000, 30,000 for the parade, I mean, this is a major, major event. Where does the money come from?
Our community, Chris, and our sponsors. We have an amazing cast of sponsors this year. Everyone came out of the woodworks like nobody's business to help support us.
Such as?
The Alexander Hotel is the first-time sponsor this year. They're our official hotel. We've never had a truly official singular hotel, and they came out and sponsored the parade, so we have a parade sponsorship. Our main sponsor, Absolute, has been wonderful to work with over the years, and they continue to increase their support and throw their weight behind us. De Kuyper, Southern Comfort have come out of the woodworks, the Damien Center. We've got Crown Hill Cemetery has come out of the woodworks this year to help us out for the first time. So, I mean, it's a really huge list of amazing community sponsors.
And we also have support from Lilly and Cummins and large corporations that are here to support us as well.
I mean, how much does it cost to do the festival? What's your operating budget?
Last year's was over $300,000.
So not an insignificant undertaking.
Correct. No, it's not.
And pocket change for Bill Gates. For the rest of us, a fair amount of money.
If he would like to sponsor us, he's more than welcome.
Well, and through sponsorships and vendor fees, really, we're able to do that. But we still endeavor to keep it as free as possible. And so that's one of the things that we try and continue to grow that sponsorship base so we can do that.
I think one of our cornerstones has always been being accessible, as accessible as possible. And that includes being a free festival. So we do ask for a suggested donation at the door. $5 gets you a fun dog tag. But if you don't have the money, you don't want to, you don't have to. It's always going to be free as long as we can do that.
Are you able to raise funds above costs for the event? And then where do those funds go?
Absolutely.
Nick. Well, it's the biggest fundraiser for Indie Pride Incorporated, which is the not-for-profit organization that is sort of the umbrella, underneath the umbrella. And so that money goes back into the community through scholarships. We have a scholarship program that we gave out over $10,000 in scholarships last year to college-age students of both traditional and non-traditional age. And really just supporting community organizations like the Damien Center and the Health Foundation.
Greater Indianapolis.
Full of words. And so, you know, we're out there supporting the community and giving back, and so that's where the money mainly goes.
Is there a target for how much you raise above cost? Do you try to say we need, you know, 50,000 above the 300 that?
I'd like 100,000 above that personally, but okay. I mean, it really. This year is going to be a banner year. We've already beat our benchmarks, so we're in undiscovered waters. We don't know what the new benchmark is going to be, but I look forward to figuring out what that is going to be at the end of the day.
We are talking about Indie Pride Circle City in Pride Festival. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. Ben, welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm really excited about the festival. I was just wondering if you guys have any plans, either now or in the future, as part of the festival, to have any, I guess, suicide prevention, suicide awareness programs, I guess, and or offer things like ally training to people who may be interested in that or interested in getting involved and, you know, helping prevent some of the awful things that happen to LGBT.
Thanks very much for the call, Ben, and the question. Well,
absolutely. We actually have an event that specifically targets this question. It's something that obviously there can never be enough of, but we do an event that's been now in its third year called A Night to Unite, and it's geared towards more of a youth audience. It's with youth performers that perform alongside already established acts here in Indianapolis, and that money gets split between the It Gets Better Project as well as the Indie Pride Youth Scholarship Fund. And that whole evening is just to talk about and dedicate time to talking about bully prevention and what that looks like through musical acts and actual conversations.
How do you choose what programs are going to be involved? I mean, admittedly, a festival that runs 7 or 8 days, there's a lot you can get done. Well, and actually, since you've started part of it and it finishes on the 14th, really, it's close to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. But it's not a limitless amount of time. And $300,000, while it's a significant sum, is not a limitless amount of money either. How do you go about that selection process, and do you choose a focus for each year?
Well, if it makes sense for the event that we're doing, then we reach out to, you know, places like Step Up and the Damien Center and IOIG, the Indiana Youth Group. If it makes sense. I mean, we've mainly been a supporter and not necessarily a programmatic organization. But we've been trying to do a little bit more of that, including a program called Reach, which is sort of reaching out to the gap kids, the ones that have aged out of IYG but don't necessarily have some place to go in the 18 to 25 set. So that's something that we definitely look at helping that age group. But really, it just comes down to if it makes sense for an organization to be a part of the event.
We are talking about Indy Pride Circle City in Pride Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nick Murphy, who is Indy Pride president, and Chris Moorhead, who is vice president and festival co-director. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking today on No Limits about Indy Pride Circle City in Pride Festival. My guests are Nick Murphy, who is Indy Pride president, and Chris Moorhead, vice president and festival co-director. Well, we were talking just before the break about how it's evolved and grown. We're obviously in this state right at sort of the intermission point of what has been a pretty divisive, hotly contested political battle about the role of the LGBT community in the state, the battle about House Joint Resolution 3 and, you know, putting a ban on same-sex marriage into the Indiana state constitution. How has that affected? Did it affect the festival's turnout last year, and what kind of effect do you think it's having on this year's turnout? We'll start with Chris.
All right. Last year, though it was prominent and people knew that it was coming, I don't think that that was the bump that we saw in attendance. I really think that that bump's going to happen this year. So many people and so many organizations banded together for the first time in a very long time to stand out against HDR3 and what it was purporting. That's the first time we've done that since I've lived here, and I've lived here for 6 years. And just to see the support and to see the organizations finally talk and coalesce and come together as one was brilliant. And I really think that that's going to lend itself to see a significant increase in this year's festival attendance.
Nick, has that helped with the fundraising piece of it? Because it sounds like I hear, you know, you mentioned Cummins and some of the who also were the corporations that were taking a stand and saying they didn't want to see HJR3 on the ballot.
I would definitely say it did. We've, you know, every year and past in years previous to this, you know, we'd reach out to these companies for support, and we wouldn't always have an open door. And really, you've seen groups like Out and Equal and groups like that have really kind of organized those multinational corporations, for lack of a better term. And they've really, to use the term, come out of the woodwork for us. I mean, sometimes without us even asking, you know, they come and say, hey, we want to give you some money for this festival.
We want to be part of this.
Yes.
We are talking about Indy Pride Circle City in Pride Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Joe, welcome to the program.
Thank you.
Certainly. What's on your mind?
Hey, I just had a question for the gentleman. In the past years, we've seen obviously mounting additional support from corporate sponsorships. This year is the first year it appears that we're seeing an option for being charged for real estate on the greens or the lawns for the Pride Festival. I'm just curious if they feel like that alienates any certain people of the community at all by forcing them to actually pay money to set up for an event that was supposed to be a unifying event in the first place. What do you think about that?
Thanks very much for the call and the question, Joe, Chris.
Absolutely. No, this is something that's been a long time coming, honestly. It's really out of a safety measure that we're doing this. It's not to be price gouging or to try and overcharge for something that should be free. Everybody's still welcome to come. It's just the canopy setup that we're trying to organize and provide a structure for. That's the intent of it and the only intent whatsoever. A lot of people expressed some interest that they would prefer a VIP cabana type option, and that was something that we kind of dipped our toe in lightly with this year, and once they sold out, we didn't know what our next step was going to be, and we wanted to continue the organization of the canopies on the festival green to make it safe and inviting for people.
How much, I mean, when we're talking, what was the fee for?
For a 10 by 10 plot, it's $25.
$25.
And that is yours all day. You don't have to rush there in the morning. You can come whenever you want. That's yours whenever you show up to set up. Before, we'd have people coming in 7 o'clock in the morning trying to jump over each other trying to get to those spots, spots.
So more it's about setting up a system to reserve spots.
It's definitely organizational because people would come in and just set their tents down, and it could be in front of somebody else's tent. And so it's totally organizational.
We've gotten an email question from a listener named John, since we're on this whole sponsorship thing right now. It says, I can't emphasize enough how historic it is for the Domino's pizza brand that for the first time ever, the downtown Domino's store will be participating as a registered vendor on the Pride Festival grounds. We'll be offering pizzas by the slice and whole pies, hand-tossed in handmade pans located – yeah, I sense an ad writer's copy here – located near the main stage. Very excited. But probably ought to put in context why it's important that Domino's, as opposed to some other pizza chain, Nick.
Well, Domino's, especially their founder, who is no longer, you know, a part of the company, but was very against the LGBT community. And so it really is a big thing. I mean, that's the great thing about local franchising. So, I mean, they're definitely more than welcome. And if there's any other group, maybe even a Chick-fil-A that wants to be a part of the festival, they're more than welcome to come.
We've also gotten an email question from a listener named Misty, and if you would like to join the conversation by email, you can do so by sending your email to nolimits@wfyi.org. Misty says, my sister and her girlfriend just moved here from Chicago. What is the one event they must not miss? I am a skater for Circle City Derby Girls, and we participate in the parade every year. Is the parade the best part? That puts you in kind of a difficult position there, Chris.
It does. There's so many things going on. I think for someone, first-time event, the parade and the festival. You really have to see it. It's an amazing, amazing thing. Just the number of people that come out and support for the community, for the parade itself, and then to march into the festival grounds and really see what we all have going on. I mean, our main stage starts at 12 o'clock with headliners this year. We're not waiting till the end. So we've got headliners at 12, 2 o'clock, 4 o'clock, 5 o'clock, and 6 o'clock versus waiting till the very end of the day. So there's going to be something for them to enjoy all day long, not to mention the fact that we added a third stage just to handle the extra acts that we've added this year.
Nick. And the interesting thing for somebody that's coming from Chicago is that their parade is the overriding dominant thing of their Pride weekend. And we actually created a festival first and then added a parade. So you might have some ideas of what a Pride festival is from being in Chicago, but ours is better than theirs if we want to come right down to it. So,
well, let's talk about – I mean, it sounds like you're creating kind of different entry points for people. You've emphasized that a lot of this is family friendly. If you have a family and small children, what's the best event there?
Ooh. Well, you've got Indianapolis Men's Chorus on Friday night, which is going to be a fun, wonderful concert, and they always put on a good show. Family movie night's one of my favorite nights. I mean, it's just a cool thing, an outdoor movie on the avenue, right in the middle of everything, and it's magical.
What's the movie this year?
This year we're doing The Wizard of Oz, which is the 75th anniversary of Wizard of Oz, and we discovered after the fact that Tuesday, June 10th is actually Judy Garland's birthday, so it was serendipity on that front.
So we're going to be seeing The Wizard of Oz on Judy Garland's birthday. Okay. Well, there is a certain – I'm not sure where to go with that.
Serendipity.
Yeah, serendipity is coming to mind there. And if – let's say you are young, single, what's the best event?
Well, if you're of age, I'd say Girl Pride or Bag Ladies Loud and Proud, because those are going to be two wonderful events.
Why? What makes them best for?
Just the talent that we have for Girl Pride this year, and the Bag Ladies have never put on a bad show as far as I've ever seen them.
Probably ought to explain, who are the Bag Ladies?
The Bag Ladies are an organization that have been around for a very, very long time. Nick, do you want to go into more depth on their history?
Yeah, they've been around for 34. They're in their 34th year since 1981, and around 1981. And really, they are a group of men who dress as women and who raise money for all sorts of organizations around the city. They've estimated in their history they've made over $1 million in that amount of time. And really, it's one of the longest running HIV/AIDS fundraising organizations in the country. And when you think that's from here in Indianapolis, it's a pretty great thing. So we're very proud to have the Indie Pride or the Bag Ladies as a part of Indie Pride.
And what is their show like? What do they?
It's outrageous. Normally, they normally have themes, and it's just the most entertaining thing you can probably see all week.
We are talking about Indie Pride's Circle City in Pride Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI. On Twitter at WFYI, or you can send us an email at nolimits@WFYI.org. So continuing on this, if I want to get, though, and I'll change a little bit from Misty's question, if I'm new to Indy and I really just want to get an overview of what the LGBT community is seeing, a community that, you know, everybody's part of the Indianapolis community in my view, but seen here, if I want to get some understanding of that, what's the best event for me to get an idea of what's going on here?
And one thing I've always been partial to is the skating party. I mean, because you really get people of all ages, kids up to adults, who just enjoy coming out and going to a skating party. And you really get a sense of community from we had over 400 people there last year just coming out and having a good time skating. So it's not in a bar. It's not, you know, in any other sort of venue than a fun throwback to skating parties. And it's really just one of those amazing events that we don't have any other time of the year.
Do you have another option too, Chris? You look like...
I'm very partial to our community picnic. I think it's such an important thing that we do. It's completely free to the community. People come out in droves, all ages, and to have it followed up by a drag charity softball game is just fun. I mean, there's no qualms about it. You know, just a good old-fashioned picnic followed by a softball game.
Ladies and heels.
Not so old-fashioned softball game. And who plays in the softball game?
The Bag Ladies, actually, accompanied by some
softball
players.
So is it sort
of
like Harlem Globetrotters playing the...
Well, we actually have some ringers on the team. So myself, I play as well. We support the Circle City Pride Softball League as well as an organization. And so that's part of their participation is by putting on this game.
Well, I guess my question, though, gets to, is it a serious competitive event?
There may or may not be a t-ball round this year, maybe some dodgeball.
Yeah, in the past, it's been much more of a softball game, but this year we're going to throw in some loops.
Okay.
You got to come out and see it, though.
Has the outcome already been preordained here?
Oh, absolutely not.
Okay.
You won't know until the very last second where there may or may not be a dance for your life.
A lip sync for your life, if you will.
I was going to say, that would be enough to scare me.
And it's great that it's in Garfield Park.
Yes. So in terms of the way this thing, you know, when you say you've got, you're looking at raising maybe $100,000 above cost on this, you fund scholarships, you fund other efforts. How much of that does go to scholarships? We got an email from a listener who was a scholarship recipient and was incredibly grateful and said basically it helped make his education, his career possible. So, you know, and how much of the money ends up going then to scholarships and what other specific programs do you fund and how do you decide which ones?
Well, I mean, last year it was about $13,000 that we gave out, and it's around that every year. I personally would like to see that be a little bit higher, closer to $15,000 or $20,000. And really, it just depends on what that profit line is, because obviously a portion of that needs to go back into, you know, the non-sexy things like rent and insurance and putting the festival on for next year, because pretty much a few weeks after we stop planning, we have to start planning again. So, but as far as where it goes within the community, I mean, we have organizations that come to us and ask for support. And we take that on a case-by-case basis. And there's also a portion of the money goes to AIDS Walk team, our AIDS Walk team for the Health Foundation of Greater Indianapolis.
Good job.
And so it's really just kind of on a case-by-case basis. We have other events as well throughout the year, like the LGBT Film Festival, which is a fundraiser for Indiana Youth Group specifically. Mm-hmm. And so some of that money is definitely used for, you know, organizational costs. But we do, you know, on a case-by-case, you know, as they come to us, we try and help as much as we can when we can.
If you've got a student or somebody out there, who wants to apply for scholarship or support, how do they go about doing that?
Normally the kickoff is the beginning of September. Okay. There'll be an online application, which is just some nominal questions that they answer. And normally the cutoff is the beginning of October. And then we as a board do the grading of the applications. And it's honestly, I've been on the board for 6 years, and it's really the most rewarding thing that I think we do. And me personally as a board member, it's always interesting to read everybody's applications. And so be looking for that in the middle of August. We'll have an announcement and you know, it'll be released about September 1st.
And then if there are other organizations, that's the scholarship process. There are organizations who want, like, mini grants, it sounds like, that you offer.
Right. They can just reach out to us. They can email me at president@indiepride.org. And we're working on a generalized form for the website, but we've not released that yet.
Okay. We've gotten an email question from a listener who says, are there any stats on the financial impact from Indie Pride for the city and area businesses?
That's something that we've been working on. We worked with Downtown Indy last year to try and figure out what that looks like from our standpoint. And we've never tracked that historically. This is the first year we're actually taking a stab at it. So we know how many hotel rooms we're going to secure. I'm going to be hitting up the Mass Ave Business Association and ask them for projected numbers as far as percentage of increase over last year's business, things of that nature. So we are definitely working on that.
Do you have an idea of who have you done a market research on who comes to the event and figure out, you know, what the demographic is in terms of wealth? Or
we've tried to capture that, but one of the downfalls of being an all volunteer organization is that we're all tied up in the day of things. So sometimes it's not possible to capture that as much as we would like to. I mean, just anecdotally, I mean, it's the gamut. It's the absolute gamut of the all socioeconomical groups, and it's really fascinating on the day of the festival just to see everybody interacting and having a great time.
Are there people you groups that you particularly target because you want them there in terms of the outreach? I mean, where do you advertise or go to promote?
We try
that?
And go everywhere. I mean,
obviously you come to WFYI and no one else. We speak to everyone.
It's really important that we get everyone there. Specifically, no. What I do is I look around and see who's missing. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing that I, at the end of the day, every year, last thing, I'm like, who's missing from this group and where can I get them? How can I get to them? And so that's when we expand our poster outreach. And we expanded that into the corners of the entire state. So we sent out packages to Muncie, to Lafayette, down south. I mean, you name it, we did it. So we're trying the best that we can.
What groups has it been hard for you to get to come to this event?
I'd see the Latino community, to be honest. I would love to see a much more Latin presence there.
Other groups, Nick, historically?
Honestly, the Latino community is one that I wish we did have some more outreach into. I mean, really, you can look at, a lot of people consider Pride to be a young thing. And mm-hmm. So there's certainly a time where a certain percentage of the group feels they age out, for lack of a better term. And we really want everybody to feel comfortable. And so reaching out to that group is also one part that I think is important.
Is trying to get older people to come.
Come back out. We're fun.
Because we wouldn't be here if it wasn't for them. So we need them to be a part of the celebration.
We are talking about Indy Pride, Circle City In Pride Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. Chris, we probably ought to give the URL again one more time.
Absolutely. So CircleCityInPride.org.
And is there a phone number if there are people who are digitally challenged here?
There is not.
There's no phone number or other way to get... Okay. Well, we will be back in just a few seconds to continue talking about Indy Pride Festival with Nick Murphy, who is the Indy Pride president, Chris Moorhead, vice president, and festival co-director. I am John Krall. You are listening to No Limits. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. We are talking about Indy Pride, Circle City In Pride Festival here on No Limits. You can join the conversation by calling us at 866-476-3881. You can send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at No Limits WFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are Nick Murphy, who is Indy Pride president, and Chris Moorhead, who's vice president and festival co-director. Well, I want to ask, you obviously, both of you, you're volunteers, right? You don't get, why? I mean, what this sounds like, among other things, a heck of a lot of work and a heck of a lot of work that you're not getting paid for. So.
Well, I mean. I've always been active in the community in some way, shape, or form, and it's always been of interest to me. It is a lot of work, and sometimes, you know, when everybody is yelling at you at the same time, you often think, why do I do this again? But on the day of the festival, I mean, you're there at 5:30 in the morning, and you start seeing people come in, and you start feeling the excitement in the room. And we're allowed to go up to the Eagle's Nest and at the War Memorial and just look down across three blocks of a festival that we worked all year for. And it just takes your breath away. And so I can't think of anything better that I could be doing with my time at this point in my life.
How long have you been doing this? I mean, obviously you've had the experience of looking down there before.
I've been on the board for 6 years. I've been involved in the festival for 8.
Okay. Chris, how about you? What's the allure for you?
For me, my very first Pride Parade was I was a little baby, gay baby in New York City, down on Christopher Street in front of the Stonewall, where it all started in 69.
Okay.
And that experience, that moment, opened my eyes and opened my heart and just made me feel so much more a part of a community that I didn't even know was there. And so when I finally got the opportunity to give that gift and pay it back forward for other people, there was no way I could say no.
Mm-hmm. Where did you come from? You said you've been here in the city for 6 years.
New York City proper.
New York City proper. Mm-hmm. And what brought you out here?
Actually, I was on my way to move to San Francisco and stopped off at my parents who live down here in downtown Indianapolis and just never left. I fell in love with the city and got engaged with Pride and started volunteering and fell in love with everything that I was seeing.
Okay. What constitutes success in your minds for this event? I mean, what is it that you'll walk away and say, oh, wow?
There's a moment that happens every festival where the festival takes over and it just runs itself. If you can get the festival to that place, and it's this weird, magical silence that comes about and everything's just working, that's the moment where you know you've done it right. I think Nick knows exactly what I'm saying on that.
Is that special not just because it means you've created kind of a machine that will go of itself, but because it says something about community? I'm picking up a subtext there that it means
absolutely
that
everyone's playing well
we're
together.
We're meshing, that we're working together. Nick, how about you? What constitutes success for the event for you?
I would certainly concur with what Chris said. I mean, it's really just you work and work and work, and then on that day, everybody comes together. And it you know, sure, it is a fundraiser, and we do want to raise money to help the community. But at the end of the day, it's, was it successful? Did everybody have a great time? Did we create, maybe just for one day, that community where everybody is together and all firing on the same cylinders and moving in the same direction? Because sometimes, as small as community can be here in Indianapolis, it's very diverse, and everybody's going in all the different directions. But on that second Saturday of June every year, we all come together, and it's that moment and that feeling that keeps me going.
Is that one of the sort of unstated goals for the festival? Because I mentioned this off the air, but my previous life, I was the executive director of the Indiana Civil Liberties Union, was involved, obviously, in some of the politics associated, and know that there have been times that the community has not, to use Chris's terms, played nice together. They don't play well or share toys easily at times. And, you know, is that something that the festival tries to create, is that sense of community and a reminder that you're together? And how effective has that been? How important is the festival to that process, Nick?
I kind of see it as a yearly reset. I mean, we have the month of June, which is the celebration of the Stonewall riots. And, you know, throughout the year, we're all going in our different directions. But in June, we all come back together. And also, I mean, for all of the work that we have to do yet, I mean, we have certainly come a long way. But there's still things like beyond marriage equality, like employment discrimination and housing discrimination, that is still actively a part of our lives here in Indiana. And so, you know, we could get marriage equality in the next few years, but the fight's not over. And that's why a pride like this and an event like this is important for the community to just sort of come back together and be like, we still have work to do.
When will the fight be over, in your view? I mean, what constitutes victory or success there? I think that I'm going to throw that one to Chris first, and then to you, Nick, because it is an interesting question. I don't think any of us would have figured there would have been this level of success even 5 or 6 years ago.
I would agree with that entirely. I don't know that the fight will ever be over, to be honest. I mean, if you look at the mere nature of the grand marshals that we chose this year, we chose somebody that has been around for a very long time and helped found the Bag Ladies, Kobe Palmer. He's been an institution in Indianapolis for 70 years. He turned 70 this year. And so he's been fighting for a very long time. Then you've got two people that helped fight HJR3 and Rick Sutton and Megan Robertson. You know, that those are two different generations there. And then you've got Leisha Clarendon, who is a Fever player and out and proud lesbian player on a professional sports team. That's incredible to see that kind of diversity and to show that that's where we're coming and that's where we're going. And I don't think the fight ever needs to be over. What I think would be truly successful is that it just becomes finally a celebration and a constant, like Nick said, a check-in.
A celebration of heritage or whatever. Nick, what do you think
I mean, we could wake up tomorrow and all of the legal hamperings for the LGBT community could be gone, but there will still be groups of people that will discriminate. There will still be a kid in high school who gets picked on for being gay. And, you know, until there's no longer a kid who feels like the only way out is suicide, there's going to be a need for a pride organization, and there's going to be a need for a pride event, because we can't lose any more of our youth like that, and they need to know that there's a comfortable place for them. And if it's only one time a year, then we've done our job, but it needs to be 12 months, 365 days of the year.
We'd mentioned that a couple of minutes ago that things have evolved pretty quickly. Can you talk about some of the ways that Indiana has moved in, just say, the past 10 years in terms of its relationship with its gay, lesbian, and transgender questioning citizens?
I think it's moved tremendously far. I mean, in Indianapolis, we certainly enjoy a more liberal experience than the rest of the state. I mean, I don't think anybody's ever used the L word for Indianapolis, but I mean, it's throughout the state and in the other areas where, you know, I'm from Logansport, and I went to Lewis Cass High School, a small high school, and I went back for my 25th reunion this past year, and I was out, and I was never out in high school, but I was out there, and, you know, I never hid it from anybody as we were through the planning process, and I had so many people come up to me that were supportive in Little Walton, Indiana. And I would never have expected that in 1993 when I graduated. And so that's it's come a long way.
Chris, how about you?
I'd say as a transplant, and you know, I've only gotten to see the movement here for the last 5 years or so, but even in the last 5 years, the dramatic changes that we've seen, especially on Mass Avenue, with the businesses coming out in support and the restaurants and bars that are just fully affirming and wonderfully supportive of our community is remarkable. And just to see how the city has transformed Mass Ave and how they have completely and utterly embraced our community. I don't think 5 years ago I would have seen men and women walking hand in hand together down the avenue, and you see that as a regular occurrence, and no one's freaking out. It's just fine.
What accounts for the change, do you think? I mean, because I again, referring to my previous life, I remember seeing the numbers on the marriage issue, which really was a barometer of where how comfortable people were with the idea of gay and lesbian, and the numbers were almost radioactive at that point. I mean, they were so high. And now there is a almost seismic shift. What produced it?
I think, I mean, it's totally generational. As the millennials and that group become more and more in power and more vocal. I mean, these kids grew up with Will and Grace on the TV screen, and it's just not a big deal anymore. And but even the older generations, the ones even older than I am, are starting to embrace. I mean, my parents, we've had a conflicted history, but they've come around in the past few years. And, you know, it takes time, but, you know, the more it's shown that we are accepted and the more that it is quote-unquote normal, everybody starts to see and believe and realize that what we're fighting for is just to be equal with everybody else, and the more people just understand that, and that, you know, it's not special rights, it's our rights as American citizens. So,
do you find that you deal with less day-to-day bias now than 10 years ago?
I'd say less than 10 years ago, but day-to-day bias is still bias in itself. It doesn't matter how much of it you're encountering. If you're still encountering it, it's still a problem.
Yeah. And how does it – are there different ways it manifests itself now than
– I wouldn't say different ways. I mean, it's the same groups of people that constantly keep holding on to this thought that we don't deserve equal rights. And their arguments haven't changed much over the years.
How do they react? I mean, are you ever able as an outreach thing to get people to come to the festival who hold those views, Nick?
We've had great success with church groups that have come. There have been some that have taken the opportunity to preach something that would be against us, and we've had to handle that. I mean, it's
how do you handle it?
Well, I mean, last year it kind of came to a head with a couple organizations, and we basically just had to add into our registrations that, you know, these are the tenets that we believe in: equality for all, you know, marriage equality, and by signing this, you agree that it is what you support as well. And that, you know, certainly would weed out any groups that wanted to, you know, take this time of celebration and put a negative spin on it. You know, we want to be supportive of everybody's point of view, but, you know, at the end of the day, this is not a day to harbor discrimination against our group. And it was a tough time to get through last year, but we weathered it. And I mean, I think everybody's on the same page now.
Who were some of the groups that showed up?
I wouldn't put specific names on any of them because I don't think they really deserve the airtime personally.
Well, I get that. But was it because the fight over HJR3 was ramping up, or was it just?
I don't think that was specifically why they were targeting. That's just, this is part of their fundamental nature as an organization to speak out against LGBT rights.
Okay, so it is something. Now, there's nothing that you can do to stop them from setting up across the street from you or whatever.
Well, they have to be at least a block away.
Have to be at least a block away?
Yep.
Why is that?
That's part of the city ordinance and the permits that we get from the city.
Oh, so.
So we own everything within a block.
Okay. We are talking about Indy Pride, Circle City in Pride Festival here on No Limits. And my guests are Nick Murphy, who is Indy Pride's president, and Chris Moorhead, who is vice president and festival co-director. Well, in terms of the events we've also gotten, I think there is one group I overlooked that a listener has reminded me of. If you're a teen and you want to come to the festival, what's the entry point there? Are there any events that are specific for teens?
There aren't any that are specific for teens. I know that there's events that they would more enjoy. The only events that is not all ages is the Thursday night events, which are both held at bars. Every other event during the entire week is completely all ages. I would definitely recommend they come check out the Rainbow 5K Run and Walk. That's a fun event that brings out a lot of youth. Pride Bowl, I mean, if they're interested in bowling, that's a wonderful opportunity for them to come out and bowl. Community Picnic is definitely all ages. Pride Skate, like Nick said earlier, is a heck of a lot of fun, and we get a lot of youth for that as well. Then I go to Diversity Night. If they're into the Fever and into basketball, that's just going to be a fun, great, wonderful time. And then obviously you got the Indianapolis Men's Chorus on Friday night.
And what is the cost if you want to go to the Fever game?
The cost, there's different price levels. They start out at $10 and they go up to $33 for the Legends Lounge package.
And are you all, is everyone who is there connected with the festival seated in the same area? I mean, is there sort of a party zone there?
There's not a party zone, but we will be handing out some rainbow flags so people can show their spirit.
Show where they are and all of that.
Exactly.
And identify. Where does the festival go from here? I mean, obviously we've seen it has grown from a speakeasy event back in the early 80s, I mean, where you took some pains not to identify yourself going to it, to an event where there were about 15,000 people, now to a point where it's flirting with 100,000.
I would like to flirt intensely with 100,000.
Flirt intensely with 100,000. Where will it be, though, 10 years from now, do you think, Nick?
It's something that I have some, wistful feelings about, because this is my final year being president and a part of the organization. And so I really think the sky is the limit. I mean, we have a great group of people that are organizing it. And, I mean, it could be anything from, the festival becomes 2 days to we move to some other venue. It could be anything, but yeah, I the goal is still going to be the same, and that's going to be to create that community for people, the one time a year where we're all working together to hopefully have it spill over into the rest of the year.
Chris, where do you think it's going to be?
We listen intently every year to the vibe of it, and I don't think I'll know that answer until we see it this year. I know it spoke to me very loudly last year, and it said 16 events over 9 days, expand.
So get bigger, and why was that?
Just the amount of people that came out in droves for every single event. We had events double in size. Pet Pride doubled in size within 1 year's attendance. Like, that's insane. To see that type of exponential growth is masterful, and you have to capture the lightning when you can.
We are almost out of time, so I'm going to ask you to give the URL one more time.
Absolutely. CircleCityInPride.org.
We have been talking here on No Limits today about Indy Pride, Circle City In Pride Festival. My guests have been Nick Murphy and Chris Moorhead. Thank you both for joining us today. And I would like to thank our listeners for joining us. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive Media Coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical Producer, Cedric Freeman. And Board Engineer, Don Hibschweiler. We invite you to join us each week for No Limits, made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.